welcome to the Expansive Podcast. It's great to have you along with us again. My name is John. I'm coming to you all the way from Bucharest, and I'm always joined with my award-winning podcast co-host, co-host, Eric the Kruger paddle player. Okay, that's, you're definitely not a paddle player. But anyway, great podcaster, speaker, and author. What's up, Eric?
I fully love your intro after we've just won the best pod of the year at the Africa Podcast and Voice Awards. It just shows you that even though we are 225 episodes deep, we keep butchering intros. It's just part of what we do.
Professionalism. Now that we've won, we don't need to be professional. You see, now we reach the pinnacle of podcast of the year in Africa. I mean, that's it. Now we have to breathe in our arrogance for a little while.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so you kind of build your way up until top level professionalism, and then you win the award, and then you just go back to back to roots, like starting all over.
Yes, like back to roots. Exactly. And in fact, actually, Eric, we are, in a way, today we are starting all over. You know, we have a brand new format introducing everybody to. But we also were told by somebody that we should be more playful on the podcast, weren't we, Eric? Did you read that WhatsApp?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Yeah. And it was interesting,
Yeah, because also, it was an interesting... we've been, for those listening for the first time, when you've done 225 episodes, you get to the point where you start thinking, well, maybe this should be in another content format as well. And so what we've done is we've taken this, we've announced this on the pod before, but we've taken the episodes, we've started scripting them into a book. And so the Expansive book will be out not too long from now. And we've had some help from a researcher who's been going through the pods and listening to it and showing us some of the more interesting highlights, because like when you look at your own stuff, you know, you kind of have your own filter on it. Like even like you've said, like when I read my own stuff, I'm like bored with it because I know it, you know? And so it's always helpful to have an outsider perspective to go, oh, this is what's interesting about your pod, or this is what's an interesting thought. And maybe you didn't think about it. And one thing that she commented on was how the pod has shifted over the years, because we don't know, we've just been doing it. And even though we've been intentional trying to bring certain changes, we don't know how the energy has changed, how the format has really changed, because we're just doing it. And so she's highlighted kind of how the pod has evolved over the years, which is very interesting to see and to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I was also, when she sent us that WhatsApp, and it was a long WhatsApp, and I read it and I was like, yeah, she's got a point, you know. I think what she explained was that initially we had no pressure on us. We were just doing a pod. We're having a conversation. And then once it started getting traction and started winning awards, we're like, hang on a second, we've got to start doing this seriously. And she's like, yeah, it comes across that you got too serious in a way, you know. So I thought it was interesting, because I think also the people that listen to the pod are spending time with friends. Like it's almost like you're sitting with friends having a lach, and it doesn't always have to be perfect. In fact, it shouldn't be perfect. It should be conversational, easygoing. And that's the whole point of how we started the pod. So besides winning the podcast of the year, what did we do last week, Eric? What was that thing that happened? I mean, I was at a friend's house for dinner and you're like, yes, man, we won it. I was like, wow, I can't flip and believe it that we won podcast of the year in Africa. I mean, that's a huge deal. Like think about winning podcast of the year in Europe, or like, I mean, it's big, man. It's big. And we're up against some really big names out of Ghana and Nigeria and all a bunch of different places. So amazing.
Man, I couldn't be prouder, to be honest. Like, and the more I've thought about it, you know, it's so weird because, again, once you're in it, you're just in it. But then I think post the award for the, like, a few days after, it started really hitting me that, you know, we've really put in the work over time and we've really evolved as hosts of the podcast. And obviously, you know, we've also developed our friendship on the outside of this podcast as well. And that's translated back into the pod. And we've brought in new team players, like Robin has been part of the team. Gerald has been part of the team. And they've helped to also elevate the podcast in how it's showing up. And so I think it's, you know, it comes back to what we always say, is that how do you create an award-winning podcast? Well, you spend 8,000 minutes fine-tuning and making it like slightly better in small ways over time.
You're so right.
And then eventually that's where you end up, you know?
You're so right. I've not even thought of it like that.
Yeah.
It's 8,000 bloody hours of talking. And you said that in your post. And thank you so much for that very, very kind and beautiful post you made. But it's true. I don't think I've spoken to anybody as much as I've spoken to you, to be honest. I'm like, and that's what you wrote in your post. I don't think I've spoken to anybody more than John. I'm like, he's actually right. I don't know who I've spoken to for longer than I've spoken to you. That's such a crazy stat, actually, you know? Besides your wife insane. And your dogs.
It's insane.
I mean, yes. I must be the next person you spoke to the most, yeah. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to keep on the theme of being expansive, but what we wanted to do is introduce four or five new pillars into the pod and tell you what the latest stories are inside those pillars. We've chosen these pillars because we think if you've got an eye and an understanding of these pillars, you are naturally more expansive in your decision-making. You have stretched your knowledge base so that you can make more macro decisions based on the information that we're going to be touching on a weekly basis. And also this gives us an opportunity to also share with you the latest stuff and then with Eric and my sort of angle and understanding of it rather than us just coming in with a story. And that's the real difference here. So the sort of four or five the pillars that we have, the first one is technology. The second one is leadership and what's going on in the world around organizations and leadership. The third one is economics. So what is going on in the world of economics? What are the big moves that are happening out there? And both Eric and I aren't really numbers people, but we'll tell you in a broad way to what for what to be looking out for. We'll also be touching on culture to understand what's going on around the world on the biggest sort of cultural stories and some really interesting things happening around the world. And then lastly, some politics and not to take anybody's side in politics, but just to have a brief understanding of what's going on around the world. And, you know, I live in Dubai. I'm very close to what's happening in South Africa. I'm very close to what's happening in America because of TikTok. Thanks so much, TikTok. So we watching politics, but I think what we've also got is a very cool understanding of different types of politics. You know, if you think about Dubai and the UAE, there's actually no politics. There's no parties to vote for. There's families that own the little emirates, and they get along and have done famously well of getting along. And I can imagine these are billionaire families and they all get along. And so the understanding of politics there is very different. And we'll be touching on one of the stories from them here. But we want to give you these sort of five sectors and five pillars and then dive into them and just unpack them. So Eric, you want to kick us off with the first story? Or have I missed anything on an intro?
No, I think that's perfect. And I think ultimately, you know, the idea isn't to swamp you with news. It's still to help you just gain a fresh perspective. Because I do think also that there's increasingly what becomes really important is the role of curators. Because we just have so much information already out there. And we don't need to add to that. What we actually need to do is to find what's important and highlight that for you. So that when you come into the pod, we are saving you time. Like literally saving you time by showing you the most important things. And also hopefully then helping us all to become collectively smarter as we just think through these a bit and think through the implications for how we are showing up, how we are approaching the future, how we are recalibrating, how we think, feel, and act as we move forward. Mm-hmm. Give us a bit of grace as we go through the first couple of episodes and find our feet with this new format as well. But John, I mean, the very first one is all about Abu Dhabi. So maybe that's one for you to kick off with.
Okay, great. So there's been a new strategic partnership, and obviously this is under the technology sector, and there's been a new partnership between the US and Abu Dhabi. And I've been to a bunch of talks with the Minister of Artificial Intelligence in the UAE, both in Abu Dhabi and in Dubai, and they are very serious about centering themselves as a leader in AI around the world. And so this new partnership with BlackRock, GIP, which is Global Infrastructure Partners, Microsoft, MGX, and NVIDIA, all coming together to put in $100 billion into the AI infrastructure, into sort of data centers and that sort of thing in the Middle East, in Abu Dhabi. And that is just next level, shows you the vision of the country of UAE and what they're busy with. And in fact, one of the talks I watched the Minister of Artificial Intelligence give was really interesting because I had never thought of it the way he explained it. He said that the Islamic world, when it first started, introduced so many amazing new innovations into the world, like mathematics. That comes from the sort of Islamic background. But also what happened is that the religion became quite strict and eventually banned anything that was coming out of the Gutenberg press. So nothing was allowed to be read in the Islamic world except the Quran. And what the Minister of Artificial Intelligence said, he said, look, that obviously gave us focus on the religion, but kept us behind the rest of the world because we just weren't getting access to the right information. He says he thinks that was a big mistake because it stopped that region playing a bigger role in the world. And so what he said in the speech is that this time we can't get left behind. This time we want to be two steps ahead of everybody. And so Abu Dhabi is pushing this and they've brought in some amazing people. I mean, geez, the people that they were giving talks at these conferences, really amazing people from around the world. But I've also seen that Saudi is also going for this. Saudi is also now playing in the AI world and also spending billions of dollars setting this up. So really great to see that this partnership is happening. America are still the kingpins and the OG when it comes to this thing. So having them involved is really great. And also, you know, remember, UAE is like a Switzerland of the Middle East. You know, they're friends with everybody. So to have this partnership is really cool, and I think it's really exciting to watch what's happening.
You know, I was listening to a pod the other day, and the guy said, everything in life is cyclical, and you have to always remember that success plants the seed for failure. And it's such a poetic way of saying it, you know?
Yeah.
And so it makes me think of this immediately, that, you know, you create the technology, and in that, there's something that starts growing or forming that might inhibit further growth or further, you know, movement into the future. And so it halts, it stops it. And then now, like, when you listen to the story, you go, oh, but these guys have learned the lesson, you know. And so often we go through history where we don't learn the lesson, and then you keep bumping your head and you keep planting those seeds for failure, and you keep like not seeing the growth or the expansiveness that you want, and you go, well, what is that? And like, you realize that you've never really learned from what happened, from like where the failure occurred.
One thing I got to say about those royal families, they're not entitled. They are really not entitled, because what you're describing there is a level of entitlement. Like, if I think, and to all our English listeners, no offense, but your country's kind of upside down. And I know, it's not rich coming from South Africa, because it's also upside down. But either way, if you look at what's happening in the UK, I was watching a documentary about it being moving towards a third world country. And if you take the economy of London out of the UK, you're dealing with a close to a third world country. Lots of unemployment, lots of people on poverty lines. And the thing is with England, they've been so powerful for so long, and then you get to a level of entitlement. And now you're like, hey, I don't need to do much. I don't need to be innovative. I'm bureaucratic. And so, yes, Dubai, not only are they innovative and like forward thinking, they're just not entitled at all. There's just like everybody's working, everybody's focused on what they're building. It's really just a very impressive place. And I just love it that they've done this deal. You know, America are really excellent at what they're doing with the AI, and let's see how it pans out. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes.
And of course, this is sort of the biggest war at the moment, is the race to be the AI kings, you know, to dominate the AI sector. So everyone's obviously making lots of investments into that space. But good to see them.
I wouldn't say it's the biggest war, Eric.
Well, I'd
say it's the
look.
I would say it's a technological war.
Yes, of course.
There's a couple other wars.
New ones, right?
A couple other wars that can go left field quickly.
All right.
So, I don't mean to be laughing at the wars. It's not cool what's happening there, but it's a different type of war.
For sure. Definitely a different type of war, which should be implied, like, knowing that you're listening to the Expansive podcast. So going from all the way from AI to mushrooms, one of our topics that we tend to discuss the most on the pod, but with like a bit of a spin. So there's this great video that has been surfaced recently, where they've now started to integrate mushrooms into robotics. And it's super interesting. So they, like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. I went and like read through two or three different versions of the articles, because I'm trying to understand exactly what is happening here. But essentially what they were saying, that in mushrooms, you have this mycelium, which is the like connect or the communication part of the mushroom. But also that in certain mushrooms, when they monitor activity in it, and there was a specific name, I think it was like the an oyster mushroom, something like that. When they monitor the signals inside of it, it's almost like a brain that's in deep sleep. So it spikes with activity, and then it comes down again, and then it spikes and it comes down. And so what they did is they found a way to integrate that into the robotics of this like small little spider-like robot. And what would then happen is that when this spikes, when you get this increase in activity, it would activate the robot. And then this thing would
light was activating it.
No, they did both. No. It was both.
Did they both?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How were they activating it then for it to start moving?
No, that was on its own. It was when it had these signals that were just occurring inside of it. Yes.
Surges. Okay.
So they did that. And then they also used the light to stimulate it even more. They actually did three different sort of variations of this experiment. And it's just really interesting because, you know, when I read things like this, I always go, we have no idea what's coming. Like, you know, we focus on AI and what the implications of that be. And then like out of left field comes like mushroom powered robots and like, like who knows where that takes us? Like, what sort of a world are we living in here?
a couple things. I was actually watching a documentary on the DNA, our human DNA. And the ability for it to store information. And they were talking about terabytes of information being stored on one DNA strand, like deeper and more advanced than anything we even understand. So it's interesting that these scientists are connecting nature into biotech. So this is biotech, right?
So for sure.
Biology technology has moved from science to engineering, which means that now you can construct it, deconstruct it, put it together. And this is what they're doing. They're taking biotech and sort of infusing it into technology. I mean, that is just a crazy, crazy idea. But either way, and then you also realize that under the ground, you have something called wood wide web, right? The mycelium connectivity highways that are connecting all the trees and plants that are sending signals of warnings, nutrients, food. There's a whole level of intelligence that these mushrooms are carrying that we really have no clue on, and we're still only figuring out now. So anyway, so very interesting story, very exciting to keep track of. I think we should keep track of this story because the more understanding of what nature can do around us and the level of intelligence that it has is just wonderful. I'm loving that AI is bringing a lot of this to the surface, you know. The other story that is the Earth Species Project. We've spoken about that where they've broken down whale language and dolphin language and elephant language. That's all AI, you know. It's all this pattern recognition that it can do is just so interesting that what it's going to give us access to.
Yeah. And listen, I think this kind of story is exactly what The Expansive is about in this format, you know, is like we just don't know what we don't know. And there are so many stories that are being pumped out every single day. And over time, like we become so focused on the things that we specialize into, you know, our worlds become quite narrow. And rightfully so, I think in some ways, like we need to be able to have a high level of specialized knowledge to be valuable in this world. I truly believe that. And unfortunately, that comes at the cost of maybe losing some curiosity about other things. And if you don't have that sort of peripheral knowledge, then you might get into some trouble. So this is just about fueling your curiosity. That's really what this is about.
Yeah, good. So next time you go grocery shopping, when you look at mushrooms, you say, hey, that's a battery of the future. You can eat your batteries. And then some of the batteries make you trip.
Yeah.
And those are really good batteries.
Be careful where you get those. Yeah.
Tripping batteries. Now we're talking. I like it.
Cool. What's next?
Right. You want to jump onto a leadership story for us, Eric?
Yeah, well, there's actually two interesting leadership stories that I think play very well together. So the first one is that Nike has obviously had quite a difficult time over the past like year or two. But they've recently had one of their best days in the stock market. And this was after their new CEO was appointed. So his name is Elliot Hill. And he stepped in to replace John Donahue. And like one of the interesting things about this is that Nike had run into big trouble because of the decisions that the CEO made, obviously. And he made some very specific decisions about direct-to-consumer sales and kind of foregoing some of the other ways that Nike was reaching its customers. And so this guy, stepping back in, he's had something like 33 years of experience inside of Nike. So he's not an outsider. He knows how the company operates. But what's quite interesting is that, you know, he steps in and all of a sudden you see a big jump in the stock price. So people are vouching for him. They think he's going to get the job done. But I want to kind of combine that with another story, which is a local story, which is that I'll put them together in a moment. We haven't had load shedding in South Africa now for about 6 months. And so for our listeners from abroad, load shedding was this period of time that we went through, or this thing that we experienced in South Africa, where they kind of switch off your power very intentionally for certain blocks of time. And so this is when, you know, there's a electricity shortage, and you would get kind of ratcheted up. So all the way from level 1 to level 6, which determines how much power you have for the day. And so every day you'd have to check your schedule to see at what times will your power be switched off during the day. And this would happen for, you know, months on end. But now for the past...
Years
on end.
It went on for years.
Yeah, years on end. But we had breaks in between where it was a bit like less, right? But it ran for many, many years. But now for 6 months, we've not had load shedding at all. In fact, I put away our inverter yesterday and realized that it's just been gathering dust. And one of the big reasons for this is they've switched out leadership. Is that Mteto Nyati and Dan Morakane both stepped into leadership positions. So Dan as the CEO of Eskom and Mteto as the board chair. And why I want to kind of bring these two together is because when there's poor performance, the first people that should be put on the chopping block is leadership. And the company performance or the team performance, even sports teams, like everything really comes down to what is leadership doing. And I think, you know, we've seen in both these cases is that for a long time, it doesn't perform to the standard or to its potential that it's capable of. And then you go and you switch out leadership, and all of a sudden there's this new energy that gets infused and things seem to start falling into place. What we see in the environment is really a reflection of leadership. And the longer you are willing to tolerate poor leadership, the longer it gets, or the more difficult it becomes to ultimately fix the issues on the ground. And so I've loved it. Like you're looking at Nike, which is a massive, you know, organization that's had an incredible legacy, that's run into issues, and like they've realized, okay, we need to swap out a jockey. And the same thing with Eskom. And you can see when both of them already there's an uptick and things are moving in the right direction. And it came from not trying to fix things on the ground, but fixing things the level of leadership.
Yeah, I mean, the Nike one is interesting. I've seen a bunch of documentaries around why it lost so much market share. And it's always the same story. The big companies get too big. They start focusing on the wrong things. And the new players are coming in with more innovative designs, more guerrilla marketing, just a different approach, more exciting, fresher ideas. And Hoka and On have eaten market share right in front of Nike's nose. And to be honest with you, whenever I used to travel, I used to always go check out a Nike shop because I was like, hey, let me see what they've got. They got such shit. They're terrible. All the designs, I don't like any of the designs. I keep buying Adidas and some other shoes because I'm like, Nike just lost it. I don't find them attractive at all in any way. And obviously Hoka and On are on most people's feet these days. So yes, excited to see what this guy does. But again, he's just got to make his organization more nimble, listen to the market more, and they weren't, you know? And I think that's what happens when you become such a big, successful company. And then Mteti, what's his surname? Mteti?
Mteto Nyati.
Mteto Nyati, yeah. That guy is amazing.
Yeah, he's a machine.
He is a masterclass. He is a masterclass in leadership. He's calm. He's collected. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Adrian Gore from Discovery. Very clear, very like uses simple language. And he's been a successful chairman in 5 major like from MTN to like right across like massive organizations. So for him to come in and within a year or so of him being in, taking away a problem that South Africa was suffering and the economy of South Africa was suffering, the mood of South Africa was suffering, everything was suffering. For him to come back and change that so quickly has been just a remarkable, as you say, leadership. But then we've also got to give kudos to Rassie Erasmus, who's also a leadership guy, who's also in the South African sort of place with the rugby and what they're up to. And I watch a lot of TikToks on rugby sort of commentary, and all the TikTokers from around the world, the rugby commentaries are like, we used to fear going to play All Blacks. Now we fear to go play Springboks.
Yeah.
It's switched from we fear to go to Ellis Park, we fear to go to Loftus. Loftus not there anymore. Eh?
Loftus, it's still
Cape Town Stadium.
No, you're thinking about Newlands.
Oh, Pretoria.
You're thinking about Newlands.
That's Pretoria. Yes. Sorry, yes, Newlands is gone. And so Rusty's also got some amazing documentaries out there. I don't know if you watched Chasing the Sun, Eric. Have you watched that?
I just watched snippets of it.
No, man, you must watch it, bro. It is excellent. It's the whole backstory. No, you must. Because, I mean, I've been sitting in bed at like 11 at night watching it. So much testosterone running through my body. Like, yeah! Like so much energy. And I'm like, whoa, calm down. I feel like I'm in high school again. It was so good. So, yeah, we have a lot of good leadership around us. It's fantastic to see these guys doing it. And Nike needed to do it. You know, they were in trouble. So, yeah, very good stories on that front.
So, over the weekend, I spoke at an event for Toyota. And I was joined by Nick Mallett. And Nick Mallett was one of the former Springbok coaches. He coached for 3 years, led us to a World Cup victory, and then went on to also coach Italy, coach France. And it was very interesting because like his entire talk was essentially just him telling stories about the box and, you know, the backstory of it. And he also shared quite a bit about, you know, sort of Rusty's approach and all these kind of things. But two things. One is, he said, what you always feared as a coach is DCM. Don't come back Monday. So that's when when your performance was so poor. They're like, you know, don't come on, don't come in on Monday.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a good reminder for all leaders, you know. And I think the Nike and the Eskom story both, like, probably way past their DCMs. Like, they should have had their DCMs way earlier. And the second, which wasn't really, it's not his story, but just something that I remembered about Rusty, is that one thing that he did that was really brilliant was that he gave the substitutes, because like when you think of it, you know, you have 15 guys on the field and then you have about 8 guys on the bench. And those 8 guys, they are the substitutes. So they're just there to fill in the next round or whatever it may be. But one of Rusty's most brilliant moves was he took the substitutes and he gave them an identity. And that identity was, you are now the bomb squad. Like, you're not just here to fill in. You are here to come in and make the difference.
That's what's called the bomb squad.
How smart is that?
Of course, but I think that is his strategy. But that is the strategy. Because I remember that game where he did 7 changes in one go. Like, the whole forward pack, he changed. And that changed the game. And everybody was saying that's illegal. You can't do that.
But because now what's happening is that instead of sitting on the bench and you go, oh, I'm here to substitute. You go, oh no, I'm here. I'm part of the bomb squad. Like, it changes your mentality sitting on that bench. So smart.
Yeah, he's so smart. I've watched those documentaries with much excitement. But I love, you know, everything he ends off with is just get out there and F them up, boys. That's it. That's every... After every strategy, he's like, you go out there, you look him in the eyes, he knows that you're going to hurt him, and you just F him up, okay? That's it. That's like the last words before every time they go there. Just be as physical as possible. They must know you
Afrikaans
there.
Afrikaans boy gear tight, for sure, yeah.
And also, he's got the colored guys in the back and the Dutchman in the front.
Yeah, smart.
He's got
smart.
The Manera, like, and he's also got some heavy set Africans. So he uses the coloreds are the best back line ever. They are unbelievably fast, you know. And if anybody thinks colored's derogatory, it's not. In South Africa, it's a third race that we have. So, those guys are unbelievably fast. They're just superb. Okay, so the last story when it comes to leadership is Amazon has come out recently and said that everybody has to come back to work. No more hybrid, no more working from home. That's all done and over. And now we're going back into work. And you know, I got to be honest with you. I think it actually is necessary. I was very much on the hybrid thing. But the more I think about it, the more, if you work in a corporate, your relationships are so important. And, you know, I've never really worked in a corporate, but I've listened to so many speakers and lectures around corporate living. And one of the tips this lady said is that you walk the floor every day. And so you make sure you're seen, you're greeting, and you're talking to everybody. So you're on top of mind. So every morning, walk the floor. In the afternoon, walk the floor. Stop by and say hello. What that does, it keeps you top of mind and it gets you to get promoted and you're in conversations. Now, think about you and I, right? What we do is we put information out online so that people can think of us as top of mind when they're making bookings for their next conference. This is what we are doing. In the corporate setting, it's connections, communication, walking the floor. When you're working from home, you're not doing any of that. Like, it's, you're just not. And you're not in the mix. And so, yes, I imagine the travel to and back work is the real issue here, because that sucks. Nobody wants to be sitting in traffic for that long. And traffic is a killer of the soul. But ultimately, if you're serious about corporates, you got to be at work, dude. I mean, maybe one day off a week, maybe like I think two, maybe max. But like, I mean, even that's going back to hybrid. So yeah, I think it's actually quite a necessity if you're working up the ladder, you know. And the way I think about it is that we don't take a day off social media, bro. We don't take a day. We can't. It's like, that's actually what we are doing, walking the street, walking the street. You working the street. I'm walking the offices. Yeah, you're walking the streets, Eric. It's like, how'd you build your speaking career? Well, I started off in Hillbrow.
Walking the streets.
When I was walking the streets.
Updating my LinkedIn bio after this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Amazon's got everybody going back to work. And we were talking about Amazon before we got on air. I've moved into a new place in Dubai and I'm furnishing it. And Amazon has been a game changer. My God. I'm just sitting there at like 11 at night. It's like, oh, I need this. I need this. I need this. Next morning, 11. It's at my house. I'm like, oh my God, what a genius. Every time I order something and it arrives and it's perfect, I'm like, Jeff Bezos, you deserve this. Good for you. Good for you.
Ripped,
and 15 lots.
And a billionaire. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Ripped billionaire with three jets. Good for you. Good for you.
Listen, it's interesting because every time you have a big company that announces their return to work policy, everyone just flares up. Like, it's kind of like this debate is quite settled and just sort of running in the background. And then a big company announces return to work and like it just flares up and you have people coming out from both sides, people going, oh, like everyone should be allowed to work remotely. And then people going, well, no, the best is to be in the office. And then obviously the hybrid guys. But I think they were doing 3 days a week, which from what I've seen, a lot of the research say that sort of the best middle ground is 3 days a week in the office and then 2 days at home. But the trend that I've kind of read on, you know, is that it's been kind of stable since COVID. Like since post-COVID, the distribution between like people who are just in the office and purely remote has kind of stayed stable. So it's not like jumping massively one way or the other. But I do tend to agree with you that I think that for people to really be collaborative in nature, I think it's good to be together. You know, I've just in my own capacity, I've facilitated online brainstorming sessions and I facilitated in-person brainstorming sessions. You can't compare them.
Suck online.
You can't compare them. You know,
no, you can't.
And so, no, terrible it, I mean, it is yeah. tough because yes, you do have to sacrifice a lot. And I think that's a big part of this is that if you've been working remote for a long time, it also kind of becomes such a big part of your identity because it dictates how you spend your day with your kids and maybe going to the park and all these kind of things that you do. And the moment you have to then go back to the office, it's not just the commute, it's the fact that you have to sacrifice all those small moments that have become yeah. part of your day.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's the really tough thing, you know? And that's why I've seen that people are willing to take a pay cut in order to remain remote. Because I think
yes. to stay there,
it's
yes.
for the lifestyle sake, yes.
Well, look, I mean, corporate life, you've got 5 years left. I mean, it's over. The agentic thinking is here. Agents are here. Honestly, think about what's going to happen over the next 5 years. Corporates are going to shrink massively. I already know people that in America are building agents, which are these self-propelling, self-thinking, self-processing AI agents that are, he's building like an army of them and these agents go in and replace whole departments and organizations. Mm. And when I was speaking to him about it, I met him at the NASA event and he was Charles, we should have him on the pod actually. Very interesting how he thinks about AI. I've never heard anybody explain AI like that. We should actually bring him on. And he's replacing whole departments and organizations. And he says, it's a bit of a dilemma because I'm like taking people's livelihoods away. And I said, you know, if you don't do it, somebody else is. He says, yeah, I've also had to realize that. It's like, if it's not me, somebody else is going to do it. And then also what we got to do is realize that the phase is here. It is now here. It's like, we've been hearing about it. Okay, now it's here. Okay. Now we need to start evolving and we need to start thinking about things in different ways. So, Corporates, be at work, get those networks done. But I think there's a skills shift that's going to be needed very soon as the agentic thinkers start coming sort of into the mix, which is, you know, agentic thinking is regenerative AI, which is one up from where we are as generative AI. Then we go to regenerative AI, which is agentic thinking, which is self-propelling, self-healing, self-educating AI systems, which is, I don't know. I don't even know where that's going to go. But let's do our last story, Eric. Last story. And the last story is about a fascinating topic called Sean Combs, P. Diddy, who has been up to no good for many, many years. And apparently, people have known about it for a very long time, but nobody's come out and said anything. And for me, it was kind of new news watching it on TikTok unfold. And the people don't know is that P. Diddy was groomed, apparently, by another senior executive who wanted favors, sexual favors from him when he was very young, which he gave into and was funded to open up his first music label called Bad Boy Records at 24 years old, being funded that amount of money, which was never heard of. But as you start to dig deeper, you start to realize he had a sugar daddy. The sugar daddy was the guy on top of whatever the music, I don't know, Universal or whatever it is. He groomed P. Diddy. P. Diddy then picked up the same system where people had to do him sexual favors to get involved in getting stardom. And then that's moved into debauchery parties of having all the stars there, filming it and doing an excessive amount of drugs and taking advantage of a whole bunch of different people. Apparently 3,000 people have come to the and have sent formal complaints about the 30 years of parties that he has been, or 20 years of parties that he's been hosting. And everybody from politicians to judges to lawyers to like stars, he's caught them all. So he's been not only super freaky himself, but incredibly malicious and gangster, you know, to like control the music region and the music industry. And amazing that this is all coming to light and it's all been happening for so long. And like, it's, you know what it is for me? Like when I hear it and it's like boredom. You're just bored. Like you don't know what else to do with your money. So you're like, pay people, own people, do what you want to people. Like what else is there to do? And this is really the it shows you the level of consciousness that's stuck at celebrating, celebrating in physicality only, not understanding that there's a whole other layer of consciousness. So at the cap of this reality, it's more sex, more drugs, more rock and roll, more. And eventually, you know, to be honest with you, it's just boring. You know, how many more of these things can they do? But they were just getting worse and worse and more depraved and more depraved. So, yeah, it's quite a shocking story. Have you been keeping track with it?
I haven't really. I saw it. And, you know, again, it's all about cycles, you know. That I saw this quote once that said, you know, someone in your family will have to break the cycle. They'll have to do the healing. It might as well be you. And when I see something like this, that's all I can think about, is that you are continuing the cycle of abuse instead of being the one that takes ownership and that rather stops it. And it's such a tough thing for all of us. You know, we all have certain cycles that we are likely to perpetuate because people in our lives have created that for us in some shape or form, be that a parent or a guardian or a teacher. Like someone does something to you and the instinct is to perpetuate that. And like, you know, hopefully you'd be conscious and aware enough at some point in your life that you can go, I can break the cycle instead of pushing it further down the road. There was also this Netflix documentary. I'm struggling to remember the name now, but it was about these two brothers that took out their parents.
Yeah, the Mendes brothers.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Mendes brothers. Yeah.
And it was the same thing.
Crazy.
Crazy story. Yeah. But what struck me was the dad was abusing the one brother.
Yeah.
And then the one brother abused the other brother. And he said it was because it was almost like normal. Like it felt like he had to do it to someone else because it was being done to him. And so, you know, for all of us, like we are walking blind spots, but so we often don't know that we do what we do, but we are also quite aware, I think, often of the big traumas that we've experienced in our lives and the things that we've done to us that were wrong, and we have the opportunity to break that cycle. And I think we should be as as aware as possible and as intentional as possible and go and do the work and go and do the healing so that you don't perpetuate it, so that you send more light into the world than darkness.
Well,
so when I read that, that's I feel sorry for him, man, dude. I feel sorry for the people that he's also like put into the cycle. I feel sorry for him having been put into the cycle in the first place. But you have to take the ownership and break it.
You know, that went left field, eh? I was hoping we'd have a good gossip about all the people going down, and you went deep. What the hell, bro? You went deep. Like, yes, okay, I know it's trauma. I don't care, man. Can I have a good gossip about this crazy, freaky idiot? What the hell was he up to all this time? I mean, we didn't even know it. And I mean, he was telling us, it's called Bad Boy Records. I mean, it was called Bad Boy Records. Anyway, you are right. Yeah, of course, the trauma needs to be healed. And I guess this is all coming to light because trauma needs to be healed. It's being highlighted. It's being magnified in many ways. So look, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Eric, have you got any more stories that you want to join? I mean, I should have said that first, though. Are you any other stories you want to share before I start saying goodbye?
No, I think that was really good. Well done on getting through the first episode in the new format. It was fun. It was entertaining. It's good for us to also think about all these topics, you know, because I think where most of our thinking comes from is the work that we do. But often what we end up sharing is not the stuff that has informed the work that we do, but rather just the output of it. Whereas this is more of like, okay, let's look at the raw material of like stuff happening and then the implications of it. So I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm about to go out for dinner with some clients here in Bucharest in Romania. So I'm really excited.
Nice.
It should be some, you know, it's always nice to be in. They don't use the euro, by the way. So I don't even know. He gave me the bill today. I just went for a quick snack before the pod and he gave me the bill and it was like 61 filas or like something like that. I was like, what? Because I first thought it was 61 euros for a chicken breast. I was like, what?
Okay.
I was like, hang on a second. You charged me 61 euros. He's like, no, it's not euros. It's something else. It's filler. I'm like, I don't know. What the hell's filler?
Okay.
I was like, but you're part of the euro. He's like, yeah, but we don't use the currency. I was like, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah, interesting. So
who are you speaking for?
It's a company called Coface. I spoke in Bulgaria 6 months ago for EY. And somebody in the audience is a chairman of this company. And so they booked me from the Bulgarian event. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Nice. Yeah, I'm going to be walking around tomorrow doing a bit of a tour and the next day and then back to Dubai. So nice couple of days ahead.
Awesome. Mm. Amazing, dude. Enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Wonderful to have you again with us. And, you know, for the first time ever, we're going to be signing off as Podcast of the Year. Thank you so much. And we look forward to chatting to you next week. Ciao.